Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is Nick Wright. Brian Westbrook joining us.
Good morning.
Good to have you here. You were telling
a joke. How are you doing?
Right before we went on the air, you might as well share it with everyone.
Oh, no, I wasn't telling a joke. We have very funny producers on this television show. That's all. They just say things to me right before the show to try to make me laugh, and today they got it done.
Sometimes they do That's it while all. I'm talking.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So shout out to all the behind-the-scenes folks today.
I love it. We got a lot to get to on the program, and we are going to start with yesterday's big news in the NFL. After much speculation, the Carolina Panthers have fired their head coach, Ron Rivera, gone. He coached the team since 2011, including loss in Super Bowl 50, but he couldn't navigate a tough 5-7 season plagued by an injury to his star quarterback, Cam Newton. Well, Cam weighed in on Instagram saying this one hurt deep. Owner David Tepper explained his decision, saying, "I believe this is the best decision for the long-term success of our team. I have a great deal of respect for Ron and the contributions he has made to this franchise and to this community. I wish him the best. I will immediately begin the search for the next head coach of the Carolina Panthers." So, Nick, one thing leads to another. If Ron Rivera is gone, what does this mean for quarterback Cam Newton?
I think it opens up a window, however slight, that the Panthers do the smart thing and keep Cam as their quarterback next year. Quickly on Ron Rivera, though, he's an excellent coach. I know we'll talk about his future in a bit. I did not think he should have been fired. I certainly don't think he should have been fired midseason. I think it was a mistake by the new owner in Carolina, and one that is hard to justify given all that Ron Rivera's done for that franchise. Just my take on that, but he'll land on his feet, and I know we'll get into that. For Cam, if it's true, as what I heard some people speculating, more than speculating, seemed like informed speculating, people that had talked to people on the ground yesterday in Carolina, that they might want to go to one of these collegiate coaches, maybe a more wide open offensive model. If I'm the Carolina Panthers, I certainly would like to see if a healthy Cam Newton at a very reasonable $20 million cap hit next year, which is the Nick Foles range of quarterbacks in the modern era of paying quarterbacks, if he can work with that, how healthy he is, and if not, I would then look to the following year's draft, or maybe even this year's draft, with a year in waiting in mind for my next quarterback. So I think that the Panthers as an organization had basically decided we're moving on from the coach and the quarterback. But once you move on from the coach, what if the new coach says, "Well, I think I can work really well with Cam. I think some of these collegiate models we're seeing work really well with Cam's skill set." So I think the window is open slightly ajar to keeping Cam Newton in-house, because I don't think anyone's going to come in there and say, "Kyle Allen's going to be my quarterback." It's either Cam or through the draft. And Brian, even if it's through the draft, maybe you want to keep Cam Newton for the final year of his contract.
Yeah, I love the idea of keeping Cam Newton. I think when you have a veteran quarterback that has been through wars, a healthy Cam Newton. That's the biggest question. But when I hear the owner, David Tepper, say we're rebuilding, it's going to be messy, and it's a process, to me that all says that we're not going to keep Cam Newton. We're going to go and move on to a brand new coach as well as a brand new quarterback. And I think that can be a messy process. You have a lot of things going for you there in Carolina. The biggest thing is Christian McCaffrey. And if you go away from Cam Newton, you bring in a rookie quarterback. What are you going to do with him at that point? He's one of your stars in that city. That's something that you have to think about. You see what's going on in New York with Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley, and trying to match up the time that your star running back is going to have a quarterback that's capable of playing and helping them win. That's a messy process. And if you're talking about a 2-3-4 year process, why not keep Cam for a year, just like you're mentioning, groom a young quarterback, and then at that process, when that process is over, transition to that new process. That's the best way to do it, especially when you have a great weapon like Christian McCaffrey.
David Tepper also said that it was time because long-term mediocrity would not be tolerated. Do you think this has been a mediocre team the last couple of years? Well, or is the answer yes, because of the injuries plagued by Cam Newton?
Exactly right, Jenna. We need to understand what Ron Rivera and Cam Newton had done in Carolina the last half decade. They go 15-1 and go to the Super Bowl. The next year, they win the division and win a playoff game. The next year, they go 12-4 and get to the divisional round of the playoffs before losing a really good playoff game to Drew Brees and company in the New Orleans Saints. And then what happens? They're 6-2, and then Cam Newton gets his shoulder hurt, and since then it's been a disaster. They're 1-7 the rest of that year. They are this year they're 5-7 on the season. Like, that is what they've been throughout this Cam Newton era, as far as a couple, three division titles, if I'm not mistaken. They've been to the playoffs four times. They have been consistently in it when Cam's been healthy. And so I don't think you needed to rip it all down. But to your point, the new owner seems like he wants to rip it all down.
Yeah, he wants to rip it all down. Getting away from a coach that's going to bring you character, that's going to bring you consistency, that's going to bring you culture, that has NFL experience, it just doesn't always make sense at the middle point of the season. Here's the other thing. When you get embarrassed and lose to the Washington Redskins, yes, who are a historically bad football team over the last 15, 20 years, that's why these decisions actually happen. But you also got to wonder, what happened to that defense? When this team was good, that defense was rolling. They end up having Ron Rivera called in the defensive side of the ball. That defense still hasn't quite figured it out. Offensively, they were rolling when they had a run game and Cam was in that pocket throwing the football and running the football as well. We're not quite sure if the new coach will want Cam to run the football anymore. That's why I think Cam is probably done there in Carolina.
And what's the theme in the NFL? What have you done for me lately? They don't look at what he's done in the first couple of years of Ron Rivera's career and coaching career in Carolina. It was what was happened the last couple of years, regardless of whether it was because of Cam's injuries or not. I love Ron Rivera, too. I worked with Ron when he was, I think, the linebackers coach in Philadelphia. He's a strong guy. He's a great coach. You even said it. He's definitely going to land on his feet. Where do you think he could end up?
Well, I think right now the Dallas Cowboys and the Cleveland Browns should both be. There's no tampering with coaches. Well, even if there is, it doesn't matter because Ron Rivera's now been fired. Even though they are yet to fire Jason Garrett and Freddie Kitchens, those are two teams that are ready to win right now. Two teams that I believe have above average, if not better, quarterbacks. Two teams that have enough talent on the roster that if they just had better coaching would be not only in the playoff picture, but I think leading, potentially leading their respective divisions. Cleveland maybe not leading over Baltimore, but right there in the thick of the AFC playoff hunt. Those, a team like that needs a coach like this. And a team like that, I believe, could use a defensive-minded, hard-nosed head coach that says, hey, we're going to hire the offensive coordinator. His job is going to be the quarterback. My job's going to be everything else on the roster. So I wouldn't, if I were Dallas or Cleveland, try to go with a Lincoln Riley type, which maybe works, and maybe you're going after another coach in a couple years. I know Ron Rivera can coach in this league. I know that two teams that lack discipline, that lack attention to detail, could use a coach such as Ron Rivera. So those are two teams that I feel like we know the jobs are going to be open at the end of the year. I think they should start the bidding war right now for Ron Rivera, because one of them is, if they're smart, is going to get him, and one of them is going to be missing out.
You're absolutely right. Both of those teams, they need a defensive-minded coach. And I think when you talk about what's going on in Dallas, Kellen Moore has done a decent job of progressing Dak Prescott, but they both need discipline. Both of those teams, when you talk about the defensive side of the ball, and in Cleveland, offensive side of the ball, they need discipline. They need a guy that has pedigree in the NFL. And when you bring in one of these young coaches, there's a lot of veteran players that are always looking at him like, well, what does he know about the NFL? What does he know about what's going on in this league? But you bring in a guy like Ron Rivera, he's a guy that they're going to say, all right, it's no nonsense from day one. We're going to be disciplined. He has a pedigree as a player as well as a coach. He led his team to a Super Bowl in 2015. And at this point, now he has to go out there and continue to coach. And he will. He will continue to coach. And I was with him in Philadelphia as well. And he was a guy that was no nonsense. He led that linebacker group under Jim Johnson. And he's a guy that can go and change things in Cleveland as well as Dallas. And so both of those locations would be great for Ron Rivera.
Take a lot of discipline to change things in Cleveland right now. Just a little pot shot on our way to first break of the show. Carson Wentz and the Eagles in Miami to face the Dolphins. Second quarter, fourth down. Dolphins line up in a funky formation on
the
one.
Gate. It's called the swinging gate, Gina.
Field goal attempt. Kicker Jason Sanders catches the touchdown on the true play. What is it called?
The swinging gate.
Swinging gate.
You can find it in Football for Dummies 101.
Miami takes the 14-13 lead. Fourth quarter, Dolphins up six. The Eagles went for that Hail Mary. It was anyone's ball. Dolphins say, it was ours. Wentz picked off. Eagles fall to 5-7 on the season, despite three touchdowns from Carson Wentz. Here's head coach Doug Peterson after the game.
It's crazy as this is, I mean, I would say it's a long shot, but we're not out of it. We do have four, you know, of our division opponents coming up, and the guys got to understand that, and it's my job to make sure they do understand that we're still fighting and coming to work this week and ready to go and try to figure this thing out. In my position, I've got to make sure that the team understands that we got to guard against that, and we're still a good football team. And again, listen, it's about what we do.
Right now, the title in the NFC East is like hot potato. No one seemingly wants it. The Eagles had a chance with Cowboys losing. They couldn't cap on it. What has gone so wrong for this Philadelphia team, Nick?
Well, everything at this point, and I take issue with what Doug Peterson said there. I don't know if people caught it at the very end. He said, we're still a good football team. Compared to who? What's your evidence?
The division?
But even compared to your division, you're looking up at a Cowboys team that is playing its worst football of the year right now. In your conference, the complete list of teams with worse records than the Philadelphia Eagles: Washington, the Giants, the Lions, the Falcons, and the Arizona Cardinals. That's it. Yesterday's loss cannot happen if you have any hope of not only being a playoff team. You're going to get to host a playoff game. It's going to be a ton of fun when we get to watch an 8-8 NFC East team host a 12-4 wild card team. It's going to be outrageous, but that's what we're staring at. You're up 10-0 immediately against the Miami Dolphins. They claw back in it. You're then up 28-14 in the second half, and you let the Fighting Fitzpatrick score 23 straight? You got to be kidding me. It wasn't a game where all of a kick return touchdown, we have a blocked kick, Carson Wentz has four fumbles. No, your defense just folded up shop in a game you saw on Thanksgiving. The Cowboys lose. You know your schedule. You know it's all in front of you. You know what I know, which is you're going to get a home playoff game, you win the division, whether you deserve it or not. Right. And to blow a 14-point second-half lead to these Miami Dolphins in a critical game cannot happen if you're an average football team, much less the good football team Doug Peterson claims they are.
Can I put that on a T-shirt, the Fighting Fitzpatrick's?
Yeah, no, yeah, you can have it.
I love Brian Flores, who has this team playing amazing. You know, we laughed at the Dolphins early in the season, but they were in a lot of tough games early on, and they're learning how to finish games. You know, Devontae Parker, who was thought of as a cast-off, really has made some big plays. But I think this is more about Philadelphia and their lack of a killer instinct. I feel like ever since they got that title, we've heard reports that, that they've been, didn't Orlando Scandrick say that? Mm-hmm. That we're going to have on the show later, said that, they're still celebrating and living off of that Super Bowl, because in that city, it's the first one. They don't seem like a hungry team. They don't seem like a team that's got a lot of grit to it anymore. It used to be like that, playing the underdog role, but now when they're the favorite, they don't come with that same fight, that same energy, and it's really starting to show. How can you, two teams that would disappoint you, say Cleveland and Philadelphia, understanding what you have ahead of you, you can't lose to the Miami
Both
Dolphins.
Both up double digits in their games.
Right, because that tells me that you take the foot off the gas and you get conservative and you can't find a way to finish games against a team that you could have stepped on their throats. I mean, I don't understand. 8-8 probably will win this division. And the only good thing, the silver lining, why Doug is saying, hey, I got to get the troops and let them know where we're at, that was the AFC opponent. Now they have all the opponents in their division, and they face the Dallas Cowboys. If they're able to win out against the Giants, against Washington twice, I mean, the Giants twice, Washington and Dallas, then that gives them a better NFC.
Of course. They can still win the division part, but the problem is when we talked about Philadelphia and that they were in such an advantageous position, even though they were trailing the Cowboys, it was because in addition to the Giants and Washington, they had the Dolphins.
Yeah.
Like, if you can allow 23 unanswered to Miami, you are not a lock against anyone. You're not a lock against Danny Fumbles. You're not a lock against Dwayne Haskins. You're certainly not a lock against the Cowboys, that Jekyll and Hyde team. Like, this Eagles team has no excuse for yesterday. Yeah. You want to say the reason that their season's gone awry was they lost their speed at the wide receiver position. How many points they score? Scored 31 points yesterday. That's got to be
more than enough to win,
to beat the Miami Dolphins.
The problems that they're inflicting them now are the same things earlier on in the season. The roster, leadership in that locker room, and then the shaky play of Carson Wentz, who, by the way, yesterday actually played well enough to win the game.
Exactly.
Right.
If you are up 28-14 on the Miami Dolphins in week 13 with a chance to tie for the division,
gotta win,
and you don't finish it, then everyone has to wear that from the head coach on down.
Here, first things first, Brandon Marshall is with us all day. Great to have you. Even greater. And we're now joined by Sports
Even Greater.
Senior writer.
What up, man? How are you doing? Oh, take that, Brandon. Nope. Brandon Marshall's fine, but now we got the real star of the show, Chris Mannix here.
You see how they twist the words around? They
no,
exactly.
No, he didn't twist it.
Okay.
Just
exactly. Sure. Verbatim. Yeah.
Love to have you here.
Good to be here.
It's great. Brandon, as always, love you being here. Let's talk about other things. Let's talk about the enigma. That is Kyrie Irving. This summer, it was the New York team in Brooklyn who signed Kyrie and KD, not the one at the Garden. And while the Knicks have had their own share of problems, Brooklyn might have one too. Kyrie's missed the last 9 games with a shoulder injury, and in his absence, the team has gone 6-3. With him in the lineup, they were 4-7. Nick, you buy the narrative that the Nets are actually better without Kyrie?
This is so interesting, and I'm so glad you're here, not just because you cover the whole league, but you obviously cover the Celtics on a local level and the whole league on a national level, so you have real contact with Kyrie from the last couple years. This now is 3 places that this has happened. Cleveland, before LeBron got there, was terrible with Kyrie as the lead guy, but he's young and the roster wasn't good. But the problem was, if you looked at the on-court, off-court numbers, if LeBron wasn't on the court, even the 3 years they played together, and it was, hey, for 3 minutes at the end of the first quarter, lead us, Kyrie, the Cavs were a bad team. They were bad with Kyrie as the lead dog over the course of a season. But we also saw him in the NBA Finals and in the playoffs consistently be exceptional alongside LeBron. He then gets to Boston. And that first year in Boston, correct me if my history's wrong, things are going really well. Gordon Hayward suffers a horrific injury, which is awful, but team's playing really well. Then Kyrie gets hurt, and they go on this really improbable, magical playoff run that, yeah, it did take them 7 games in the first round, but they won it. Then they win in the second round. They get up 3-2 on the Cavs before LeBron goes Superman on them to end their year. The next year in Boston, they are worse than the team that we saw at the end of last year. And what you saw was Tatum and Brown and other guys not know their way exactly. And now we're in Brooklyn, a team that last year was not only just a surprising team, but a good team with good young players coming together. And Kyrie gets there and Spencer Dinwiddie's production falls off. And the team is, Kyrie's numbers are unbelievable. He's averaging almost 30 points a game. He's sensational. He hits a game winner. He almost hits another game winner. He does all these things. But the team is losing. Then Kyrie gets hurt. And all of a sudden, Dinwiddie's playing himself again.
Fantastic.
The team's winning. And so at some point, it's not a coincidence. I can't find the analytical reasoning, which is what I try to lean on, aside from maybe he is such a ball-centric player and such a gravitational player as far as everything has to revolve around his offense that other guys get stagnant. But right now, it does not appear that he can be the best player on a team that can even be good, much less great.
Well, there's some truth to that. I think that the comparisons you're making for me are a bit of a bridge too far, right?
Okay.
The Cavaliers stuff, that was post-LeBron. They were young. They were bad. They were a mess. Boston, look, I am all for giving Kyrie his share of the blame in Boston. His lack of leadership was a driving force behind why that team melted down. Though I would say in the year before, they were playing really good basketball right up until Kyrie got hurt.
Yep.
Right up. So like Kyrie going down, it's not like they were playing poorly, then took off.
Correct.
They were playing great and then they took off and surprised people at the end. This Nets situation is totally different to me because look at who they're beating right now. Like, you're not going to sit there and say they can't beat Chicago, Charlotte, Sacramento, New York, Cleveland. On this run, Boston's really the only good team they've beaten here. So I believe they'd have the same record if Kyrie was in the mix. And the numbers you talk about, Nick, this season, yeah, they're 4-6 with Kyrie in the lineup, but offensively, their numbers are better in virtually every possible way with Kyrie out.
Well, by the way, that was the same with Boston last year when he was in or out, because last year even he missed time. And we talked about it, that all of their numbers were better with him than without him, except for wins. Like, and that was, and I'm not talking about year one with Kyrie, I'm talking about with year two. And it's just, to me, it's last year I always dismissed it, Jenna. Whenever you would bring up, here's the record without Kyrie, here's the, and I would dismiss it. I'm like, he is the best player on the team. You cannot take him out and make your team better. But if it happens again, and maybe this is too small of a sample, then to me it's something that has to be acknowledged.
I'm not concerned at all. I'm actually moving back to Brooklyn. All right. So 3 years I played in New York, one with the Jets, two with the Jets, one with the Giants. I lived in Brooklyn. All right. I'm a Brooklyn guy now. I'm moving back to Brooklyn. And when I do, my son and I, we're going to sit courtside. I am more excited about this team now than I ever have been. This isn't about Kyrie. Right. This is just about the narrative. This is the story. Right. And so if we want to dive into the story, let's do that. OK. When you look at the Cavaliers in that situation there with LeBron James, this is more about the maturation of Kyrie and him trying to find his way. I leave that situation the way I did, and it was bad. It was toxic. And I go to Boston. Now it's me. I am the man. Let me go lead the way. That's not his makeup. He's not a leader. He's a talented guy. He's one of the best basketball players ever to walk this earth.
He's not a Robin, but
he's not a leader, okay? So he learned that there. They didn't bring Kyrie in to lead my Brooklyn Nets team. They didn't bring him in to be the leader. They brought KD in to do that, right? So this is more about, okay, this is the story and less about Kyrie and his personality. I'm selling this. I'm not concerned at all. I'll be sitting courtside come next year.
Yeah, look, it's a fair point on the Kevin Durant stuff, because in a way, none of this really matters. Like, nothing this Nets team does this year actually matters. As long as they are not the basketball version of the Clampets and that they hate each other and look like Boston from last year, everything else is going to work out. It's going to be a completely different team playing a completely different style at this time next year when Kyrie comes back. Now, your earlier point...
When KD comes back.
Your earlier point about how Spencer Dinwiddie's numbers go down... That's a fair concern, because these guys have to know what they signed up for. Spencer Dinwiddie was one of the driving forces in bringing Kyrie Irving to Brooklyn. He was the guy in December that is texting Kyrie Irving saying, this is where that you want to be. So this is what you wanted. You've got to kind of accept it. But if they bow out in the first round of playoffs this year, even if they don't make the playoffs, it doesn't matter.
As long as they don't hate each other,
it does not matter.
Okay, so hold on. This is more general. But we got to stop with the nothing matters but the one team that wins the title. Nothing matters for Brooklyn this year because they can't win the title, so why play the games? It's one of the reasons that despite the league having more parity than ever before, this season being so interesting, people aren't watching as much. Pardon me. It's one of the reasons that the narrative surrounding all-time great players like James Harden, has he made an NBA Finals in Houston? Well, 40 a game. Who gives a damn? Everything matters. Some things matter more. And whether or not Kyrie Irving, even for one solo season, can be a part of a winning formula does matter, at least to a degree.
But he's a champion, though, Nick. He's a champion. That says a lot. We put guys in these positions as leaders because they're talented. If he's walking around and he wants that and he's saying, I am the leader, then that's his fault, right? But this guy is a champion. He has that pedigree. All we need from him, I need 25 points a game to win. When KD comes back, I need 25 points a game. I need 7 assists. And I need you to hit the clutch shot in those clutch moments. That's what he needs to do. I don't need him to lead my team. I don't need him to stand up when things are breaking down. I need him to do those three things. If they do those three things next year, they will be in contention.
Well, when KD's not there, he should at least have some semblance of de facto leadership, I think, in his resume.
It's just not in his DNA, though. Like, it's never going to be.
Talk about the Patriots, who some say will still be in this Super Bowl. Despite their 10-2 record, though, it has been a rather underwhelming season for Tom Brady. And yesterday, a new column on NBC Sports Boston pinpointed all the reasons we may be seeing the end of Brady's career in New England. It's a great read if you get a chance to read it. Remember, Brady will be a free agent this offseason. What do you think, Nick? Will this be his final season in a Patriots uniform?
Full disclosure here, I hadn't even been thinking about this, even though we knew Brady's contract's expiring, even though I've been as loud as anyone that Brady is in a far different place of his career than he was in even 2 years ago. But then I see this column, and the column's written by Tom Curran. Tom Curran is as plugged into this team as anybody. Tom Curran wrote a book with Julian Edelman, Brady's best friend on the team. And Tom Curran says at the very beginning of this column, flatly, barring a seismic change, this is going to be Tom Brady's last year in Boston. Does not say in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Says it's going to be his last year with the Patriots. And so I read that and I'm like, well, what else is he going to tell me in this piece? And the more you looked at quotes from Robert Kraft back in 2013 when Tom Brady got his last major contract extension, where Robert Kraft says, we just can't be the type of team that spends 18 to 20% of a salary cap on a quarterback. And that was, you know, when Tom Brady was still in the prime of his career. And then you remember what happened this offseason, Canty. This offseason, Tom Brady, his three previous years, here's what he had done. 3 years ago, executed the single greatest comeback in the history of the Super Bowl to win his fifth championship. 2 years ago, wins league MVP, throws for 500 yards in the Super Bowl that they ultimately lose to Nick Foles and the Eagles. Last year, he goes toe-to-toe with Patrick Mahomes, even though he didn't play great in the AFC Championship game. They go on the road, win that game, win their sixth Super Bowl. And this offseason, not only did he have to sing for his supper for a contract extension, he sang for it, said to the media, you guys think I deserve one? Ask Mr. Kraft, do a poll, and didn't get it. If Bill Belichick was not comfortable giving Tom Brady a contract extension and refused to, even though Brady wanted one, after those last 3 years, the hell is he going to do this year when they don't win the Super Bowl, when they don't make the Super Bowl, when Brady is having the worst year he has had, arguably of his career, inarguably of the last 15 years? So I read this column and I said, could Tom Brady have 20 quarters left as a Patriot quarterback? The four regular season games, and if I'm right and they're going to lose either to Houston or Baltimore or Kansas City, whoever they play in the first the divisional playoff game, yeah, he could. And I don't think that means he's got 20 quarters left in the NFL because he does not want to hang it up. And there are going to be plenty of teams that would love to have even a 43-year-old Tom Brady. But the column is persuasive and the history is persuasive that unless they go on a what I would consider very unlikely Super Bowl run, I do think this is his last year in New England.
Well, here's the thing. I understand all the points that you're trying to make, but I don't understand why everybody wants to bury Tom Brady and the Patriots with this situation. They're a double-digit win team already through the first 12 games, and they're in the driver's seat to have a top seed in the AFC, either one or two, just depending on how things shake out the rest of the way with the Baltimore Ravens. But, I mean, they got this game coming up against the Kansas City Chiefs, and then guess what? Their next three opponents, you're talking about the Buffalo Bills, Cincinnati Bengals, and Miami Dolphins.
Well, the Bills are tough now. But
the Bills are tough, but the Bills got to go to Fox.
Yep.
And so I just have a hard time seeing Josh Allen be able to beat Tom Brady in Foxborough, knowing what's at stake. And the Patriots value having that first round bye in the postseason. So if we're talking about the Patriots being one of eight teams competing for the championships once we get to January football, then yeah, I think they got a pretty good chance of making their ninth straight AFC championship game. And if that's the position they're going to be in, I have a hard time betting against them not to make it back to the Super Bowl. But based on what I've seen on the offensive end, you have to be a little bit concerned about the Patriots because usually by this time of year,
we figured out
what kind of identity they need to be
in order to
win football games. We saw that at the end of last year when they turned into a two-back running game with Rob Gronkowski as an in-line blocker at the tight end spot. So I haven't seen any semblance of what they're going to be in terms of being able to consistently move the ball on the offensive side, and you have to be a little bit concerned of the optics you saw on that Sunday night game with Brady screaming at his receivers.
Well, I'm really glad you bring that up because, by the way, if they make the Super Bowl, I agree with you, he'll be back. I think if they make the Super Bowl, he'll be back because that's, even by Patriots standards, it's a hugely successful season. I don't think you have to win it. But let's just assume for the sake of argument, because I don't think you would dismiss as an impossibility that they get, if they play Houston again in the first round of the playoffs, that they lose. If Baltimore all of a sudden somehow falls to the three line, Baltimore gets some, but whatever. Yeah. Let's just say they have a disappointing run in this year's postseason pre-Super Bowl. It's not only that we know what Belichick feels about moving on a year early rather than a year late. It's that it seems to me pretty clear that Tom Brady disagrees with me that he is a big part of the problem in New England right now. That Tom Brady, I would imagine, feels let down by the lack of weapons, frustrated by that he has to get with these rookies and young guys and that the timing routes aren't there, that they didn't replace Gronk, that they never adequately replace Brandon Cooks, who they traded for, got him for 1 year, moved him out, and since then tried to replace him with Josh Gordon, gone, Antonio Brown, gone. And you do have to wonder if Tom Brady, after feeling like, okay, you guys wouldn't give me the extension I wanted, you wouldn't put the weapons around me I wanted, I've had the most frustrating year personally in what, at least maybe ever, yeah, the last 15 years, if we throw out the blown ACL year, the LA Chargers, where he owns a home, going to be in the market for a quarterback next year, man. Like, now, do they want to move on from a 37-year-old to get a 43-year-old? I don't know, but if they're trying to get market share, Tom Brady sure can help. To me, it wouldn't, if they have a disappointing end in the playoffs, it might be where both sides say, you know what? You think I'm washed. I think you haven't done enough for me. You didn't want to pay me. I'm the greatest player ever. You could have locked this up a year ago when I wanted the extension. You wouldn't give it to me. Maybe the Bulls moved on from Michael Jordan. Mm-hmm. Like the last time the Bulls were saying, listen, we're not bringing back Phil. We're not bringing back Scottie. And Michael said, all right, I'm done with this. He clearly still wanted to play basketball. He came back. Like
the 49ers moved on from Joe Montana.
And I know they had Steve Young, obviously, and the Patriots don't. But sometimes for the greatest ever, it's messy at the end.
No, you're absolutely right. But I have to look at the other side of that, which is what is Bill Belichick's alternative at the quarterback position? What, you going to roll with Jarrett Stidham? I mean, they don't have somebody that they've been grooming, that's been waiting in the wing. It was Jimmy Garoppolo, yeah, but we see Tom Brady went over Bill Belichick's head to Robert Kraft and forced that trade. So it's a situation right now, you're as loyal as your options. I don't think Bill Belichick and the Patriots are going to have many options in terms of replacing a player like Tom Brady and then being able to keep it pushing in terms of competing for championships.
It's real hard, though, to picture Tom Brady in a uniform that isn't a Patriots uniform.
Can I give you a make-believe scenario where everyone wins?
Go.
Trade Tom Brady and Josh McDaniels for Dak Prescott. Dallas gets its coach, gets its quarterback. They get the biggest star in the league. Patriots get Dak. I'm sure they'd love to pay him $40 million. Works out great.
That's a great
thing. I think we'd rename this show First Things First on the Cowboys if the Cowboys had
right.
I really think that's what would happen.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.